Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on the world's billionaires. We will hear from the author of a new book about the super rich and the influence they have on policies and politics.
What I wanted to do was just kind of do a serious analysis of billionaires in terms of who they are, how they got their money.
We look at the influence of the world's super rich on society. Today on As It Is from VOA. The world's super rich are the subject of a new book called Billionaires, Reflections on the Upper Crust. In American English, the term upper crust describes people who belong to the highest social class. Members of this class are not always wealthy, but often are. Darrell West wrote the new book. Mr. West is the director of governance studies at the Brookings Institution, a policy group based in Washington, D.C. In the book, he examines the influence of billionaires on politics, not-for-profit organizations, and the rest of society. Mr. West uses information from Forbes magazine's list of the world's more than 1,600 billionaires. They control more than $6 trillion in wealth. Darrell West says he wrote the book because he wanted to learn more about rich people.
What I wanted to do was just kind of do a serious analysis of billionaires in terms of who they are, how they got their money, how they're using their money, and also just what they're like personally. Because I think many people are just curious about these individuals. Who are they? What motivates them? And so I wanted to kind of answer some of those questions to the best extent that I could.
Darrell West examined political spending by American billionaires and their use of nonprofit organizations to reach their goals. He says billionaires often donate money to candidates seeking public office. He says they are also increasingly paying for campaigns aimed at forcing changes in policy. Mr. West says he found that in the United States, billionaires are becoming more active on the state or local level. He thinks that is because American media are paying less attention to state and local lawmakers than they once did. American billionaires spend tens or hundreds of millions of dollars in support of political campaigns. Some own media companies and use them to influence issues, candidates, and office holders. They often use their power in secret to gain special treatment for their interests. Mr. West says he is worried about this combination of wealth and secrecy. He believes it affects how governments operate and may limit social and economic opportunity. But billionaires are not always successful in their efforts to influence politics. Many wealthy Americans supported former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney in the U.S. presidential election 2 years ago. But Mr. Romney lost to President Barack Obama. Some billionaires have been supporting immigration reform and gun control, but they have not been successful in persuading Congress to change the laws governing those issues. Some billionaires have attempted to change the country's education system. Marshall Tuck was a candidate for the top education position in California. He received campaign donations from a number of billionaires who support reforms in education. The group included Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York City. But earlier this month, Mr. Tuck lost in his effort to become California's superintendent of education. As Mr. West notes, money does not always equal political power. However, Mr. Bloomberg made donations to more successful political campaigns. He reportedly supported 5 winning candidates in governor's races. Most of the donations went to Democratic Party candidates or causes, but some of his money went to Republicans. Darrell West says billionaires use their money and power in other ways. He says their money is used to block people they do not like from being named to government positions. He says they can also use their influence to stop state or national legislatures from approving bills. He says billionaires have sought political office in several countries. They include France, Georgia, India, Italy, Russia, Thailand, and Ukraine. But writer William Lind believes that American billionaires are not as powerful as one might think. Mr. Lind is a fellow at the New America Foundation. He recently wrote about billionaires for Politico magazine. He says American billionaires have successfully influenced only a few social policies. He says they have failed in their attempts to reform America's immigration policy. He says billionaires have not succeeded at forcing changes to government programs set up to help older Americans and pay for their health care, and they have not been able to change the education system in the way they want.
I think the idea that the rich get their policy preferences without any significant opposition, that's simply not the case. There are issues where wealthy people do get their way, and those tend to be issues where the public is inattentive or doesn't have strong views.
William Lind says politicians in democratic countries often like to please people who give them money for their campaigns, especially rich donors. But he says an office holder may act differently if he or she believes that supporting a position will lead to his or her removal from office. Then, he says, office holders will do what they believe voters want them to do, even if it angers their wealthy supporters.
Voters still count. They make a difference. The voters, actually, they do have their own views. In a way, this narrative that the rich own all the politicians and brainwash all of the people to vote against their interest, it shows not only a lack of acknowledgement of the extent to which voters still have independent power, but it shows a kind of a contempt for the intelligence of voters. It assumes they're just easily brainwashed by advertisements bought by rich people.
Mr. Lind says billionaires are successful in reaching their goals on tax issues because they are organized, and they donate to the re-election campaigns for members of Congress. But he says billionaires do not always win in the United States. He says this is especially true on issues that voters care about and on which they take positions that are different from those of the wealthy. Darrell West says billionaires have a lot of power, but he agrees with William Lind that people in democracies also have power, helped by the news media. He says the more billionaires there are in a country, the less power each one has. That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Bicycle frames are usually made out of materials like carbon fiber, steel, or aluminum. But in rural Ghana, a businessman has developed another way to make bicycles from a natural product, bamboo. Bamboo does not get much respect in Ghana. Farmers think of bamboo as an unwanted plant that needs to be cleared from their land. Construction workers use it to support buildings while they are being built. But Kwebena Danso thinks bamboo is much more valuable. He operates a business called Boomers International. His company makes bicycle frames out of bamboo. The wooden bike parts are sent from Mr. Danso's village to other countries, including Germany, the Netherlands, and Australia. Kwabena Danso says bamboo can help a country like Ghana in many ways. He says he wants to, in his words, get the people to know that there's a great advantage to bamboo. Young men from nearby villages come to work at Boomers International. They sand, glue, and connect the bamboo frames. The company makes about 50 of the bicycle frames each month. The bamboo is grown locally. The glue to hold the parts together is made of flour from the cassava plant. Mr. Danso says Boomers International provides good jobs to young men like Abdul Razek. He serves as a foreman or supervisor for the company. Mr. Razek says that without this job, he would still be living at home with his parents. He adds that the job helps him a lot. Kwabena Danso has sold only a few of his bamboo bicycle frames within Ghana. Walter Kujoji is one of his customers. He bought a bicycle earlier this year. Mr. Kujoji says his bike gets a lot of attention when he rides around his neighborhood.
For example, on Saturday, I rode about 5 kilometers around my neighborhood, and everywhere I went, people were just looking at me, and you could just once in a while you hear the exclamation, "Hey, it's made out of bamboo. Hey, that's the bamboo bicycle," you know. And anytime I stop to take a breather, people come close to me and say, "Wow, we heard about this, but this is the first time we were seeing it. Is it functional? Does it work?" I say, "Yeah, try it."
Mr. Danso's business has received lots of orders for his bicycles. He says Boomers is ready for expansion. He hopes to have more of his bamboo frames not just in foreign countries, but also on the roads of Ghana.
And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. For more technology stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Jonathan Evans.
from VOA Learning English. Welcome to This is America. I'm Steve Ember. Visitors to Washington, D.C. know about such tourist attractions as the Lincoln and Jefferson Memorials, the World War II Memorial, the Washington Monument. But we'd like to tell you today about a very special monument just across the Potomac River from Washington in Arlington, Virginia. The Marine Corps War Memorial, also called the Iwo Jima Memorial, is one of the largest freestanding statues in the world. Today, we tell you about this memorial and the story behind it.
It's very overpowering. You can't help but think about all the lives that have been lost for our country.
Our program today is about one moment in time. Really, 1/400th of a second. That's the amount of time it took Associated Press photographer Joe Rosenthal to capture an historic image on film. The photograph shows six men and an American flag during a battle in World War II. Joe Rosenthal took the picture on February 23, 1945, on the Pacific island of Iwo Jima. Japanese forces held the island. American Marines were attempting to capture it. On the fourth day of battle, Marines fought to the top of Mount Suribachi, the tallest mountain on Iwo Jima. A small American flag was sent to the top. The Marines placed the flagpole in the ground and raised the flag into the air. But the flag could not be seen clearly far below. Commanding officers ordered the Marines to replace it with a much larger one. Joe Rosenthal was among Marines when he heard there would be a flag ceremony. He wanted to capture the event on film, so he took his camera and climbed slowly up the mountain, avoiding marked landmines. But when he got to the top, it was too late. The ceremony had ended. He then saw other Marines carrying another flag. Joe Rosenthal backed away from the group. He hoped to get a picture of both flags, one being removed and the other being placed on a pole. But he began talking to another photographer and missed the moment he was waiting for. A minute later, he saw movement out of the corner of his eye. "There it goes," he said. He swung his camera up, following the movement of the flag, and took his famous photograph. Four men are clearly seen in the photo. They are Harlan Block, a Marine from Texas, John Bradley, a Navy corpsman from Wisconsin, Franklin Sousley, a Marine from Kentucky, and Ira Hayes, a Marine and American Indian from Arizona. Behind these men are two other Marines. They are Rene Gagnon of New Hampshire and Mike Strank. Mr. Strank lived in Pennsylvania, but was born in what was then Czechoslovakia. The next day, Joe Rosenthal's film went by airplane to the island of Guam, where it was developed and printed. The photographs were given to an Associated Press photo editor. It was the editor's job to decide which ones to send to the United States. They would go on a machine that sent images by radio. As histories tell it, the editor looked and looked at the first photograph and said, "This is one for all time." Within minutes, he sent the picture of the six men raising the flag to the Associated Press headquarters in New York. From there, the photo went to newspapers across the United States. Most decided to print a huge copy on their front page. Many photo experts will tell you that the picture Joe Rosenthal made is almost perfect. The camera catches the flag as it rises. The flagpole cuts across the photograph. Wind blows against the flag. The experts also say you must look at the picture as the American public saw it in 1945. The world had been at war for years. Victory was not yet certain. Many people worried about family members. Many had a deep fear of the enemy. The picture shows strength and courage. It suggests that six young men are working together to defeat the enemy. Joe Rosenthal's photograph seemed to say, "The battle may not be over, but we are winning." It was the very image of a future American victory. In Washington, D.C., Felix de Welden saw the photograph in the newspapers. At the time, he was working at an Air Force base. Born in Austria, he came to the United States and was an artist in the Navy. Many years later, he would say, "When I first saw it, I recognized the power of this photograph. I could not take my eyes from it. I looked at the photograph for some hours and then began working." Felix de Welden made a small statue of Joe Rosenthal's picture in 72 hours. Within days, members of Congress had seen the small statue. Many began to call for a huge statue. President Franklin Roosevelt ordered the Marine Corps to send home the men who had raised the flag. By then, however, it was too late. Mike Strank, Harlan Block, and Franklin Sousley were dead. They were among the more than 6,000 Marines killed on Iwo Jima. Navy Corpsman John Bradley had been severely wounded, but he, Rene Gagnon, and Ira Hayes returned to the United States. People said they were heroes. The three men said they had done nothing but help put up a flag. But Joe Rosenthal's photograph was so powerful, nothing would change people's minds. Felix de Welden soon made a life-size copy of the statue. He carefully copied the faces of the three survivors. He used all the photographs he could find for the three who had been killed. Joe Rosenthal's photograph became more and more famous. His work earned the Pulitzer Prize. There was public demand to put the image on a postage stamp. In July of 1945, the government agreed. More than 137 million stamps were produced. People also demanded a huge statue of the six Marines. So in 1946, Felix de Welden started all over again. First, he made a statue out of plaster. Then he used the plaster form as a guide to make the final statue out of bronze metal. It took him 9 years to complete the statue. The memorial honors all members of the United States Marine Corps who died in battle since the American Revolution. Each of those battles is mentioned at the base of the statue. On November 10, 1954, President Dwight Eisenhower led dedication ceremonies at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. The burial grounds are across the Potomac River from Washington. The three surviving Marines, Ira Hayes, Rene Gagnon, and John Bradley, and photographer Joseph Rosenthal attended the ceremonies. It was their last time together. Ira Hayes died 3 months later. In 1994, John Bradley died. He was the last to die of the six men who raised the flag on Iwo Jima. Felix DeWeldon died in 2003, and Joe Rosenthal in 2006. Over the years, millions of people have come to see the huge statue that Felix DeWeldon made.
It's very impressive. It's a great piece of history.
It stands in a grassy area at the edge of Arlington National Cemetery.
Fantastic. You know, it's very emotive. It's something that you see on many images from around the world, and to actually come and see it, it's even more immense than what you imagine it is.
The statue weighs more than 20 tons. Each man is almost 10 meters tall. The men seem about to move. Their bodies push forward as they struggle to raise the flag. Their clothes show the bones and muscles underneath. Their faces show the hard work.
And you just saw what a bitter battle it was, terrible battle, and the bravery of the men. And we'd heard that even artistically, this was an absolutely beautiful, beautiful monument. And it is. It's very moving. And to see the actual flag moving, it's not.
Yes.
that adds a lot, isn't it? The fact that it's not a sculptured flag, that it's an actual flag.
Many visitors say seeing the statue is an emotional experience. People stand and look up at the six men, and they take pictures, just as Joe Rosenthal did on Mount Suribachi.
It's interesting reading the history of the six men as well, how three of them lived. Yeah. Two of them had quite a good life afterwards, but yes. Three of them died on the island. And it makes you wonder what life would have been like, actually, A, without the Second World War ever happening, and B, without the success of people like that. It's quite emotional.
It is. I mean, when you look at the photograph that was taken by the photographer, that was a one-in-a-lifetime picture, which he could take another million pictures and never get one which would stand out and represent not humanity, but the success of making people free.
You know, from heroism.
Heroism. Yeah, because you know, you read lots about what people do in war, and some things just go on and above what you would expect. So it's very good to come and see it.
Soon after the photograph from Mount Suribachi was published, some people began to dispute it. They suggested that Joe Rosenthal had placed everyone where he wanted them and then took the picture. Joe Rosenthal always said that was not true. Many other photographers with him also agreed it was not staged or posed. Experts in photography say it is easy to tell that the photo was not posed. They say no photographer would make a picture that hides almost all of the people's faces. And they say no photographer would have two of the people nearly hidden. Our program was written by Paul Thompson. We had assistance by Kim Varzi and Kelly Jean Kelly. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for This is America from VOA Learning English.